Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. You'll forgive us if we're just a little bit sluggish today. The late night vote counting in Ohio and some of the western states mean that Jim and I didn't get our full allotment of sleep last night. But nonetheless, we are here to serve. He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, a lot of different narratives out there. Romney cleaned up in delegates, won 6 out of 10 states, but apparently barely winning Ohio means that he's lost the momentum. We'll see if that's really the case. Santorum obviously won 3 states, and Newt won his home state of Georgia, which means, at least in his mind, that he's back in this thing in a real way. But in terms of the good martini, I think, Jim, where I'm looking is that despite the fact there wasn't exactly a consensus in Ohio, compared to some of the other states we've seen earlier in this cycle, the turnout was pretty healthy. And that means that folks in one of the biggest bellwether states of the fall election are ready for action. And hopefully that means that they'll coalesce around whoever wins, despite the fact there was a pretty stiff divide on Tuesday night.
Yes, if listeners get a sense that we are reaching for a good martini this morning, they are. Let me give my effort to say why yesterday could be a good martini for conservatives. I mean, other than the sense that it makes us all want to drink. this is fish or cut bait time for Republicans and Mitt Romney. He did not have a Super Tuesday. He did not have a disastrous Tuesday. I think losing Ohio would have made it very bad. But this is a candidate who has some serious problems in a couple corners of the country. It's not so much that he lost Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Georgia. Newt was expected to win Georgia. Oklahoma and Tennessee, you know, these were never going to be natural Romney constituencies. But all in all, they are, he had less than 3 in 10 in those states. That's pretty disappointing. You kind of figured after Michigan, you'd start seeing, okay, people would start coalescing around this guy. And I don't think they are. So here are the options before us. Rick Santorum makes the most amazing comeback of all time and gets the nomination. I find that kind of tough to believe. Last night's victories, ironically, were his very first contested primary victories in this cycle. Everything else has been non-binding primaries and caucuses. Just kind of bizarre to see that. For all the problems Mitt Romney is having, Rick Santorum actually has a harder path to the nomination. So Romney's still front runner, but let's face it, this is a guy who's got some problems in the Midwest and some problems in the South, and those are really kind of the bread and butter for Republican presidential candidates. I think all of the talk of, you know, will evangelicals come home and support a Mormon? Will conservatives be, will Obamacare opponents be okay with the guy who created Romneycare? Will diehard conservatives be okay with the guy who they perceive as a flip-flopper? I think those questions are still pretty unresolved, and the increasing sense is no. I keep waiting for this guy to catch fire, and he seems like he's a wet log. Look, Romney's still way ahead in delegates, but a contested convention and some other figure coming out of the shadows and becoming the nominee in late summer seems a little more plausible today than it did a week ago. And, you know, that one way or another, either the party will unite around Mitt Romney or it's going to have to unite around someone else. And so I think we're getting to crunch time here, and we will see what Mitt Romney is made of. That, in other words, he's got a tough couple of states coming up. These are southern states that are not natural states for him. Either he figures out how to do this, or the party's going to have to look very seriously at saying, all right, it's time for, you know, throw out the playbook and start doing Hail Mary passes. And we will see how this shakes out. It's, you know, because this is a very winnable election in the general election, but you need to have some appeal to independents where, you know, there's some indication that Romney can do this, but not consistent. And you need the conservative base to come out simultaneously. And that's what's looking very ominous for Mitt Romney right now.
Let's just keep the eyes focused on the real prize, and that is November. And once again yesterday, the president has given us ample reasons to be fired up for his defeat to come November, regardless of the Republican nominee. He coincidentally, Jim, as we mentioned yesterday, held a full, wide-ranging press conference. Just happened to be on the same day as Super Tuesday, when the Republicans were getting all the political oxygen. The president talking about his Iran policy, making straw man arguments against the Republicans by saying they just casually want to go to war with Iran. Spent a lot of time talking about Sandra Fluke and college students and contraception, and for some reason inserted his daughters into that argument. But the one that we're going to talk about here is the question from Ed Henry of Fox News. And my guess is the president would have acted like this no matter what Ed Henry asked. Here's how the exchange went.
your critics will say on Capitol Hill that you want gas prices to go higher because you have said before that will wean the American people off fossil fuels onto renewable fuels. How do you respond to that?
Ed, just from a political perspective, do you think the President of the United States going into re-election wants gas prices to go up higher? Is there anybody here who thinks that makes a lot of sense? A
couple points here, Jim. First of all, he's kind of like the teacher who like mocks the student for asking a serious question. And whenever Obama starts stuttering like he did right there, you know he really doesn't have a good answer. So he's trying to inject some lame joke into the discussion to completely take your eyes off the ball and make the story the person who brought up the question rather than the fact he actually has no answers.
You know, Greg, one thing that jumps out at me is, of course he doesn't want high gas prices in an election year. Now, what about those other 3 years, Mr. President? You know, it's an interesting qualifier on the timing of it. Because as we all know, he said under his energy plan, energy prices will necessarily skyrocket. Stephen Chu saying before he was became energy secretary that we need to get, you know, U.S. gas prices to be the equivalent of Europe, where they're like $8 a gallon. There's a series of comments that suggests that Barack Obama isn't all that worried about high gas prices, and that in the end, he thinks that there is a good policy result that comes out of high gas prices, which is that it forces America to reduce consumption. Now, I don't know if I like the idea of Americans being forced to reduce consumption by impoverishment. Well, folks, you can't drive to your family vacation this year, or it's going to cost you more. When high gas prices go up, it eats up discretionary spending in other areas, and Obama acknowledged that, and I'm glad that he acknowledged that yesterday. But all things considered, this is, you know, he keeps emphasizing that, well, one, there's no quick fix. Well, let's try, Mr. President. No, you know, no one's saying you need a silver bullet. But there are quite a few policy decisions he could make that would help things, and he's not. There's the Keystone XL pipeline that he could support. He could support drilling in Anwar. Bobby Jindal laid out how the permitting process for exploration in the Gulf of Mexico has slowed down to a crawl. This is not, you know, this is shallow water. This is deep water. Somebody could argue, oh, well, because of, you know, the deep water BP spill in the Gulf before, they have to go slower. Well, we have 27, you know, offshore rigs in the Gulf right now. If you're really that worried about them, why wouldn't those 27 be shut down? And the answer is, look, the vast majority of deep water wells are operated completely safely. No oil company wants to see their rig go down. No oil company wants to see their employees die. No oil company wants to deal with all the inevitable costs and lawsuits, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody's got the exact same motivation here. Operate the rig safely and get the oil out of the ground. He could be okay with offshore drilling in off the coast of California where they have natural seepage of oil. Don't think of it as collecting oil. Think of it as a pollution control operation. You could say, "He's, you know what, I'm not going to ban fracking since the fracking industry is very nervous about that." There's like a good like 8 or 9 policy proposals that Barack Obama could do that would have probably, and if he did all of them at once, they'd probably end up having a significant impact on gas prices. But they don't because the market sense that this administration is at least conflicted about increased production, is about at least conflicted about the how seriously they should be trying to bring down gas prices. And Barack Obama, you know, when he has these unguarded moments, indicates that, look, we should all be using less and less. I don't think that's necessarily a high priority goal for Americans. And actually, I don't think it really matters that much how much we use. Somebody else is going to use it. The idea that somehow we're going to reduce our carbon emissions. Look, if the U.S. suddenly had a magic wand that eliminated all carbon emissions completely, everything we do would be making up by China and India in the next 10 years. So we've lost the race on carbon emissions. Carbon is going to be emitted one way or another. The question is, do Americans do it or do other people do it? And the question is, you know, why should Americans impoverish themselves in the name of this abstract goal? So I will step down off my soapbox, but that's my as you can tell, I've been thinking about this quite a bit, Greg, and it's not just because I'll be driving to South Carolina in a few weeks and, you know, probably paying close to $4 or $5 a gallon.
We were saying just a little while ago, Jim, that for those hoping for Republicans to coalesce around one candidate, there was a little bit of a disappointment, but nothing close to the disappointment on the set of MSNBC after Chuck Todd reported that Dennis Kucinich had lost his primary against fellow Democrat Marcy Kaptur. This was a result of redistricting, so it was member versus member. They're in the same district. And Kaptur won by about 10,000 votes. On this panel, you'll hear the likes of Rachel Maddow and Al Sharpton, at least, and maybe a couple others.
That means there's not going to be a Dennis Kucinich in Congress anymore, which is almost hard to believe. He has been a singular force for his, not only for his ideological position in Congress, but he's just been such a character and a presidential candidate. You ran alongside.
ran the same year I ran. He's quite a guy, and you're right. I mean, he was the dependable guy on with the progressive community. He'll be missed.
Let's parse this statement. Singular force means nobody agrees with him most of the time. And quite a guy can mean anything. So apparently MSNBC basically found its congressman that's almost as far to the left as they are. And so they were very much in mourning for the fact that one of them had to lose. And they love Dennis Kucinich, especially since he was an anti-war guy all the way along, too. So our condolences to MSNBC on the loss of Dennis Kucinich.
Obviously, we enjoyed laughing at him. So on some level, we will miss him. I do think kind of interesting is, you know, so obviously, look, redistricting, Ohio loses a seat, they draw up the new lines, Kaptur and Kucinich are in the same district. You know, Ohio politics, Marcy Kaptur is a very big name. Dennis Kucinich obviously has this national reputation. Kucinich sensed that he was likely to lose in redistricting, and so he actually started district shopping. And it's not unthinkable, and it's at this time of year when district lines are being redrawn, that folks who think they may end up in a different district than they're used to might, you know, think, all right, I live here. Where could I conceivably move not far away in the state to run in this district or that district? Dennis Kucinich was looking at Washington State, Greg. you know, New York, up in New England. I mean, there was just this, you know, this possibility of, you know, like this, you could kind of picture him with his suitcase traveling around the country looking for which district would fit him. Call me crazy. As much as we will miss laughing at him, I think we can live with a Congress that doesn't have Dennis Kucinich. And so this idea that, you know, the country could not live without him as a talent in the Congress was kind of, you know, struck me as a fascinating example of arrogance. He was a national figure. He was not a local figure. My understanding, I haven't seen the precise numbers, but my understanding is she whomped him. Because, you know, look, she was the one who was seen serving her constituents instead of going off and, you know, flying the progressive flag and doing whatever he needed to do. So running for president several times and stuff like that. So, Dennis Kucinich, we will miss you. You provided a very easy punchline for years and years and years. And so best to you and your lovely bride in the years to come.
There you go.
That'll be me staying classy.
Two other quick notes. A Republican member of Congress also lost a primary in Ohio, Gene Schmidt, down in the Cincinnati area. The Marcy Kaptur story's not done yet. Joe the Plumber won the Republican nomination in that district, although it's extremely Democratic. The Democratic contest between Kaptur and Kucinich got about 70,000 votes. The Republican primary got about 25,000. So good luck, Joe.
Flush the incumbent. Go for the plumber.
There you go.
By the way, that's shocking news about the incumbent Republican losing, Greg. My response is to say, you're schmitting me.
You can clearly tell that we have not had our full allotment of sleep. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.